like you're a psychologist, basically. You're standing in front of a person that's sort of naked per se. They're like, this is who I am. And I somehow, you got to make them look the way that they think they are, or even better.
Welcome back to the Impact Entrepreneur Show. My name is Mike Flynn, and I am honored to be your host. Our mission here on the Impact Entrepreneur Show is not just to inspire you, but also to help you tap into and begin to believe in your God-given potential and purpose. That's right, baby. We want you to not only be inspired, but experience breakthrough. And we do that on this podcast by interviewing incredible people who are using their experiences, their skill set, their platforms to have a game-changing impact in the lives of others. And here's the thing. None of these folks are simply sitting back, living a life of leisure. They have things to do, places to go, and lives to impact. Speaking of that, Gustavo Fernandez's first career in pharmaceutical sales was inspired by his stepfather, who was the general manager for Johnson & Johnson in the Dominican Republic. Photography had been Gustavo's hobby since college, and wherever he went, he always took a camera along with him. Then, when the internet became a massive tool for building communities, he started connecting with other photographers. Ironically, one of the top wedding photographers in the world lived just down the street from him. So when he went to a workshop she was hosting, that changed the whole trajectory of his life. Now, Gustavo has a career photographing people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and many other icons we know and recognize, leaders in the world. The internet and online communities that he began with continue to have a huge impact in Gustavo's photography and career, because in this era of social media, the vast majority of new business that comes to him is through word of mouth. But you can't just be part of a Facebook group and reap the benefits of belonging to a community. You have to create lasting, authentic relationships with people. And when Gustavo is building those relationships, those human, intimate, authentic relationships, he has a few things that he does to help facilitate that. First, he always carries a notebook around with him, and he's always taking notes and following up with those conversations and those relationships that he's establishing. The other thing he does is he always picks up the phone. A couple years ago, the event planner for Forbes called to ask him to photograph an event, and she told him, "Thank you for picking up the phone," because no one picks up the phone anymore. And lastly, he loves giving small, unique, thoughtful gifts to clients and contacts. An example of that is a $10 gift that he sent to a contact actually resulted in $10,000 worth of business, and he shares that story in the episode. This is a great conversation. I'm excited to have a new relationship with my buddy Gustavo, so bust out your pens and paper, take some notes, and brace for impact. Gustavo, who was your childhood hero and what did you admire about them?
That's a great question. It, you know, it made me think on the drive down here. I was actually listening to a few of your podcasts and I was like, oh gosh, he's got some deep questions there. And I hadn't thought about this question in a long time. And the answer to that question that I came up with was Jacques Cousteau. And the reason I came up with the name of Jacques Cousteau, who's a famous, you know, diver, seaman, just a steward for the seas and steward for the wildlife, was because I grew up in the Dominican Republic. So born and raised in Santo Domingo, we pretty much spent a lot of weekends at the beach by the water. So I was always fascinated by the water, always enjoyed being on the water. So there was an old show on TV that I need to do some research and find out the actual name, but there was a marine biologist who was kind of the key person in the show. And I love that whole life. So yeah, Jacques Cousteau was definitely one of my key influences. So fascinating.
What was his, didn't he used to have like a famous saying that everybody would quote and say over and over again? It might percolate in my mind and come back to the tip of my tongue at some point, but until then we'll move on.
Yeah.
When you think about Jacques Cousteau and outside of, you know, what he did for the marine life and the ocean and the education and stuff, what are some other things that maybe might be the next ring out of his core value proposition that also inspired you now that you're an adult and you reflect back on him and his legacy?
Well, it's that last word that you just said, a legacy. It's like, how do you build a legacy for yourself, for your, you know, the things that you aspire to change, for, you know, inspiring others to change. And it just makes me think of, how does someone do this for so long, and how does he stay inspired for so long? And just that deep process that person must have to go through to do this, you know, journey for 50 plus, 60, 70. I'm not sure how old he was when he passed away. He was probably in his late 80s. So it's how, you know, how can I find a journey that inspires me to go to that length and to try to change and influence people that way, and just create that, you know, it's also very admirable what he's created. So yeah, I think he's just looked from everybody around the world as that, you know, key influential figure, and without a speck on his name.
Right.
You know, how he lived his life.
Yeah. His name is, you know, elevated in societies everywhere.
Exactly.
It's and then kids are, I'm going to be the next Jacques Cousteau.
Right? Exactly. It's like, how do you create that clean figure, that clean brand, that just consistency, and then just that commitment to his journey.
Speaking of names, my daughter, who's now 12, she's super inquisitive, very thoughtful person. She's always thinking. You could see her, like, the wheels spinning, right? And so one time she asked me, "Hey, Dad, have you always liked your name?" And I didn't always like my name. I'm a junior, but now I do. When I was a senior in high school, I had the opportunity to choose how my name was going to be read when I graduated. And so I could have just said Mike Flynn or something like that, right? But no, I said, okay, I'm going to be Mike Flynn Jr., right? And it required me to take some ownership over my name, but also who I'm a part of, my dad and my mom, right? So when you think about your name, have you always liked your name? Because our name is super important. It's what people call us by, what people recognize us by. And, you know, it's essentially our marquee.
Yeah, no, I've always loved my name. It's definitely why, and it's because it's unique. It's different. Of course, when I go home, there's, you know, a few more of me, a few more Gustavos, but it's not as common. It's definitely a lesser common Gustavo. Funny enough, when I'm into doing the ride share services like Lyft, for example, in San Francisco, there's a lot of Brazilian drivers, and they're always like, "Oh, are you from Brazil?" So it's super common in Brazil. But now, having lived in the U.S. for, you know, gosh, since high school, I love the name because, first of all, it's unique. Second of all, it's memorable, you know, and third of all, it's hard to forget.
Are you named after anyone in your family?
My father.
Oh, your dad.
So yeah.
Okay.
So he's the first Gustavo.
Yeah. So you're a junior as well.
Exactly.
That's cool. So when you think about your dad, what were some of the most influential moments or experiences you ever had with him?
Interesting question, because actually my parents are divorced. But so I was raised by my stepfather, and, you know, I'll just talk to my stepfather as it equates to this question. And basically, you know, one of the most amazing experiences he was able to give to us was education. You know, the first thing that he did when he married my mom was put us in from, you know, the public school in Dominican Republic to a private American school in Dominican Republic. So I went from, you know, first grade, you know, just knowing Spanish, to second grade. Okay, now you're in an American school. Now you're learning English. Now you're in ESL every day. Now you're, you know, you're knee deep into it. Mm-hmm. So, and basically that education of learning a second language. But then on top of that, which is the best experiences that we had, was he was an executive. So he took us around the world, basically. So we were able to go to Italy to live for a couple of years because he was leading a company there. Then we came back to Dominican Republic, and then we went to Spain because he was at another position there, and just experiencing all these different cultures and, you know, taking us around the world and just opening our eyes to see what's out there.
Wow, that's fascinating. You know, I bet you that plays a key role in everything that you've done as an entrepreneur too, because by moving you from that one school to another school that you're totally not only is the school foreign to you because it's new, but it's also now you're learning another foreign language, right? And so you are beginning to learn that you could do hard things. And certainly there must have been times, and you might recall, where you just didn't believe in yourself during that, where it was too hard, you know, I can't do this. What's a moment where your stepfather breathed life into you about what you were actually capable of accomplishing when you didn't believe it yourself?
Sure. I mean, I don't think there was exactly a moment. It was just that aspirational, you know, looking at him and what he'd done in the world. You know, he came from Uruguay himself, born and raised there. And he basically, you know, took his education from Uruguay and got out and was able to, go to Stanford University, you know, local school here, and then go to Columbia and then, you know, work for these major companies. So I looked at him as an inspiration to, I want to someday work for one of these companies.
Wow.
Which he actually was the general manager for Johnson & Johnson in the Dominican Republic, which when I was graduating college, Johnson & Johnson was interviewing at our school. And I was like, ah, you know what? I'm going to get this job. Mm. And I actually did. You know, it took me about 6 months to do that. But that was kind of a nice little, you know, aspirational thing. I someday want to work for a company like my father worked for these companies and, you know, kind of build myself up the ladder and go from there.
What do you value most in family and friends today?
Wow. Family and friends, what I value most. I mean, just their friendship, you know, just having that listening ear. That's kind of hard to find these days. And time. Mm-hmm. Time is a tough one. Not many people have time. They're just bogged down with work, bogged down with life, bogged down with kind of everyday things. And just creating that time, creating that space, you know, driving an hour to go see a friend or, you know, and spend a lunch or 2 to 3 hours with them. You know, that's kind of a rarity these days. And that's something I try to carve out time for people and make sure that, you know, I'm there for them.
Mm-hmm. I love that you answered that. I was just, you know, my conversation with Alexis Meskey, who we were talking about, one of my dearest friends, and she was a past guest of the show a few episodes ago. We were talking about how oftentimes we are thinking positively about others, like in, oh, I'm so, you know, I want to reach out to so-and-so, but we fill our lives with so much busyness that we don't do that. Yeah. What are some practical ways that you remind yourself to create that space for others?
I try to reach out constantly. So if I think of somebody, I might just send them a text. Just, you know, as Keith Ferrazzi would say, ping them. Mm-hmm. And just send them a text or send them a note or just a quick email. It's like, hey, I read this article, thought about you, you know, thought you might find it interesting. So yeah, I just kind of created that daily habit since reading that, you know, book actually back in the day, that Never Eat Alone. Mm. It's just that constant reminder that, hey, I'm here. I also do a monthly newsletter to all my friends and all my clients. So that's a nice reminder. It's like, hey, I'm here. So I love to see the responses that come back from them. Like this morning, I responded to one of my old friends and back in the pharmaceutical sales industry. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, we used to be great friends. But as you know, when you leave that kind of part of the world and you're into another world, you never really connect again. But I reached out to her. It's like, hey, let's connect. Yeah. You know, we had a great relationship then. Let's check in. It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
What's going on in your life? So yeah, my answer is just checking in every once in a while. Every time you just think of somebody, just drop them a line. Yeah. Like when I travel a bunch and every time I like just even a layover in Denver, for example, I'll look in my address book and go, who's in Denver? Who's in Colorado? And I'll just send them a text or a quick call.
Yeah.
And nobody calls anymore, which is kind of my fun thing to do. I just leave long voicemails and ramble and whatever.
I have a friend that travels quite a bit for business. And one of the things he does, and he has other friends that travel as well, he has that. There's an app, I guess I can't remember if it's on the iPhone or on Facebook or something, but he'll land in an airport like Denver, which is a huge airport. And then he'll like search for friends that might be nearby because oftentimes it's a similar spot.
Yeah.
Right. And so you can hang out. So it's just thinking creatively. And I love that, hey, I'm here attitude, because you can almost start a campaign like about that. Hey, I'm here. Just letting you know I'm here for you, you know?
Right.
You mentioned something. So you had pharmaceutical sales. Before that, you were at Johnson & Johnson.
Which was Johnson, yeah.
Oh, so it's the same thing?
Same thing, yeah.
So how many careers have you had since college?
This is my second career.
This is your second career, okay.
I did about almost 10 years in pharmaceutical sales for Johnson & Johnson, Ortho McNeil being the pharmaceutical branch that I worked for, okay. Which brought me to California. I started out in Western Kansas.
Okay.
And then my second career being a professional photographer for the last almost 11 years now.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Couldn't be more unrelated.
Exactly.
You know, what drew you to photography?
Well, photography was a hobby. Straight out of college, I, you know, started doing a lot of travel because I grew up traveling. So I love travel. So I purchased a camera and I started doing a lot of mountain climbing, mountaineering. I read the book Into Thin Air and kind of got inspired by John Krakauer and his book to do a little bit of mountaineering. So I was like, well, I got to capture these adventures. So I picked up a camera and I just started doing that. And it was just a hobby kind of on the side. And then kind of the internet started coming up in the world and you started finding these communities and the wedding photography world and kind of got connected with them. And come to find out, one of the top wedding photographers in the world lived just down the street from me. Hmm. So I ended up at her workshop and sort of, you know, from there, that kind of changed my life, you know, trajectory. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wow, this seems like an amazing journey and an amazing, you know, career.
Yeah.
And I just started there.
Do you remember a moment like when you first picked up a camera for the first time and we're going to use it with intention and not just, do you remember that moment?
Not necessarily with intention. What I would say is I definitely remember those key moments of those photos that are still ingrained in my head. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being on the side of a mountain at, you know, whatever, 14,000 feet and taking that photo that you're like, wow, look at this. Mm-hmm. And just remembering to also step back and not just look through the lens. And just, you know, take in the moment, which is a lot of times, unfortunately, what we see today is with the iPhone or with any smartphone, is people are not necessarily enjoying that moment and they're just trying to capture it. Mm. So one of those key things is like I try to remind myself is to do that, to make sure that you are kind of taking in that moment and not just capturing. But there's just several moments of some of my favorite photographs, you know, may it be on the side of like Mount Rainier or may it be in Bali at the beach, seeing the little kids play soccer. Mm. Some of those favorite photos just ingrained. Mm.
Mount Rainier, that's crazy. Did you climb Mount Rainier?
I did. Took me two times or two tries. So yeah, it's a tough mountain.
So you've done a lot of mountaineering?
Yeah, I'd say not significant. I mean, I did Aconcagua, which is the tallest in the Western Hemisphere at 22,800.
That's pretty tall.
Something, I forget. Yeah, so I was kind of working on sort of the Seven Summits idea, do Kilimanjaro next and all that stuff, and ended up moving to California. And I would go, wait a second, I can't afford that anymore.
Yeah. Well, during your mountaineering experience, what are some of the lessons that you, because you have a lot of time by yourself in isolation and thought, right? So what are some of the things you thought about most and some of the realizations that you discovered as you're grinding up this mountain?
I mean, Aconcagua is a perfect example. It's having a coach or having a guide, you know, how important that is in life. I would not have gotten up that mountain without him. I mean, I was spent. We were sitting in a tent at like 19,340 feet. And I'm just like, I can, you know, barely have any energy. And it's like, I don't want to, you know, it's cold outside and all this stuff. And you're barely sleeping because it's super loud and noisy. And so that was kind of the first time I go, wow, this is how much a coach can influence you. Hmm. This is how much somebody can help you out. I can help you, you know, organize those thoughts and push you to that next level. You know, that's why I work out with a coach every morning, like with an Orange Theory, for example. They help me, you know, push myself a little bit. That's why I'm part of a mastermind, which everybody in the mastermind helps each other push each other. Mm-hmm. And like, why aren't you doing this? Mm-hmm. Make sure you're doing that. Because if you're not, you're definitely getting kicked out. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely the key learning is finding a guide.
With that Sherpa, basically, when you were faced with quitting, what did he tell you to prevent you from making that choice?
Gosh, it was so long ago. That is a great question because I literally remember sitting like on a rock and, you know, we had to put on the crampons because there was like a piece of ice we needed to go through. And just the simple fact of putting on crampons, which is those spikes that you put on the boots to make sure you don't slip on the ice, was such a chore. And not sure exactly what he said, but, you know, I got through that and it's, you know, he was probably just reminding me of the journey. It's like, look where you are. We've been here on the mountain 6-7 days. Mm-hmm. Like, you're almost there. We're just a few thousand feet up. Like, let's do this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How long did it take you from 19,000 feet to 22,000?
That was, I don't remember exactly. I should pull up my notes from back then, but it was kind of most of the day.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, interesting. I've noticed, you know, people aren't in this room with us, but they're listening, but you have a notebook and you just mentioned that you should look at your notes from back then. So how have you developed? When did you start taking notes and recording events, because people don't do it. Frankly, I could be a lot better at it and more organized with it. So when did you begin recording your thoughts, your days, your experiences?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd have to think about that for a while. I just write things down because my mind is always racing and I'm just always, you know, ideas are just flowing through my head. And I mean, I carry around a little notepad, and this is just from the drive down. So as you can see, there's probably 10 little notes of things that I, you know, need to do, or just a thought that came to mind. And, you know, just sitting down with you, I've written like 4 or 5 things down just to follow up with you. And the reason I do that is like, I just don't want to forget. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I don't have the best memory, but I just love that I can just get a little piece of paper and write that down,
right,
and be able to follow up. It's funny because my friends joke that when my little pad comes out, it's like, uh-oh, Gustav is going to follow up, you know? so they know that, you know, I'm committed to following up to that conversation or anything that I mentioned that I would, you know, send over to them.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost you anything. It's not that much more effort, right? And you're not expending that much more time. I love that little, what is the brand of this little thing that you're, it's like a field notes.
Yeah, thing. I'll send you the link. It's just a random brand. It's from Italy, I guess. It's Tony Parati. And it's, I forget the exact, but it literally fits regular note cards in it.
Okay. Three by five
note cards. I just buy them in bulk. Yeah. And I got my name on it, I guess. You know, it's not very expensive. And it's perfect if people wear suits all the time. You know, it's in the pocket. I literally found it through a friend. I used to just carry the note cards in my pocket. And I saw a friend pull it out and go, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Give me that name of that.
Yeah. And it's not as bulky as like a field notes type thing. And then...
Which I did before. And what I found with the field notes was it was too small.
It's too small.
Because it was sort of twist and turn in my pocket.
Yeah. What is up, my friends? I want you to hit pause right now and head over to Amazon and pick up a copy of Master the Key. This is a book that has a transformational message that is having a positive impact in the lives of those who read it. And don't just take my word for it. Head over to Amazon, and when you buy, be sure to read the over 65 reviews that the book has received. And if you don't take their word for it, you can take the words of the people that have endorsed this book. Folks like Lou Holtz, Mel Robbins, Greg Amundsen, Cheryl O'Loughlin, John Gordon, and many, many others. So hit pause, head over to Amazon, pick yourself up a copy or two of Master the Key, one for yourself, one for someone you love. And let me know what you think about the book by leaving a review on Amazon, writing an honest review, whether you like it or love it or hate it. And then if you want to, you could also do a video review on Facebook. Many people have done that as well, sharing their insights that the book has revealed to them. So again, hit pause, head over to Amazon, pick up a copy or two of Master the Key. I guarantee you that you will not be disappointed. Now back to the show. Now, you make notes in both your journal and this little field notes thing that you have. And maybe if you send me the link, we'll include it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But you also have to have the habit of reviewing. So do you have a routine, an end of day type of thing that you do to review your thoughts?
The biggest challenge. You should see my desk right now. There's like 4 or 5 of these. So when I get a little too busy, you know, they definitely pile up a little bit on my desk. But ideally is I'll come back from wherever I was at or whatever event and put it in front of me and just either input it into, you know, my system, my CRM or my, you know, like Trello, for example, just to kind of keep all my tasks of what's going on and try to do as many of them quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, was it sending you this link? Oh, let me just look that up real quick and send it over. So it's just transferring that into, you know, whatever system it needs to go to. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the phrase following up, I think that is a concept that many people today just don't even consider, like the value of it, for whatever reason. Maybe it's laziness, but I don't see a lot of people following up today. And I know that's a big thing for you, is following up, and it's been transformational in your life. And if I recall correctly, you mentioned that you actually have a story about following up and the value that it's had in your own life.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of lump that into back to the basics, as in pick up the phone, you know, and return emails in a timely manner. You know, it's like, there's so many times that clients just go, oh, wow, thanks for the quick response. I'm like, yeah, I would love to have your business. To the story about picking up the phone. Yes, of course, we get a lot of robocalls these days, and that's unfortunate, but hey, you never know when that, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $40,000 client is behind that call. And that's what happened a couple of years ago. Forbes called. And the people I would deal with, I do corporate executive events and headshots for, you know, major companies out there. And I picked up the phone. It was the event planner for Forbes. It's like, hey, we need a photographer here in San Francisco. We're having such and such event. We'd love to use you. And she literally said, when I picked up the phone, thank you for picking up the phone. And I go, of course, you're welcome. And then we jokingly talked about that for 5 minutes, how like, oh my gosh, I know nobody picks up the phone anymore. I leave my friends long-winded messages just for the heck of it, because I know they're never going to listen to it. And, you know, from there, it became an amazing relationship. I did about 15 plus events the following year for Forbes magazine, shooting people like Warren Buffett to all sorts of, you know, business celebrities, which was an amazing experience from simple fact of just picking up the phone. And then again, the follow-up, you know, after an event, you know, it's key. Like, they're going to forget about you. You're going to kind of continually follow up. You're going to continually check in with them. A great story. I met a gentleman at an event that I photographed, and we connected because he was from half Dominican, and he mentioned it in his speech. And I goes, oh my gosh, no way. There's rare, you know, not many Dominicans here in San Francisco because we're so far out west. And I made sure to introduce myself and say hello. It's like, hey, I'm Dominican too. He gave me his card. It's like, oh wow, he's the CMO at a major company downtown. I was like, oh, let's connect. Let's see how we can, you know, keep in touch. So I followed up, and then I followed up, and then I followed up, and then I was home in Dominican Republic, and I was like, you know what? I looked at his Instagram. I added him on Facebook. I kind of kept tabs on him, you know, found out he had a little boy. And I was like, hey, I was at the grocery store, and I always get coffee for my friends and or clients too a lot of times. You know, what Dominican coffee costs? Not much, you know, a few dollars for a bag. And it's an amazing, you know, coffee. And it's also an experience. It's like, wow, something for somebody to try, you know, back home in the US. So I was out there, and I was walking by. I was like, oh wow, look at all the sugary, crazy treats that I used to, you know, love as a kid that are from here. And I don't think his son has ever experienced this. So I just grabbed a few of those, probably a few dollars. So it was like less than $10 investment. I had a couple bags of coffee and a few treats for his son. Got home, boxed it up, threw it in a FedEx, Googled the address to the company, send it over to him. It's like, hey, looking forward to partnering up in the future. You know, hope your son enjoys his treats. I don't know if he's ever, you know, been to try this out. And, you know, nothing happened. Probably a month or two went by. It was like Thanksgiving, and it was like Christmas. I'm like, oh my gosh, did they lose the box? Did I have the right address? Did it leave the company? I don't know what's going on. And yeah, I checked in. I had just gotten back home after Christmas in January, and he calls me up. He's like, hey, Gustavo, thank you so much for the gift. That was super thoughtful of you. I really appreciate it. What are you doing next week? I need 2 days of one corporate event photography, and I need to photograph all my executives the next day. Are you free? I was like, yeah, I'm free. So that's that story, that $10 investment of thinking about somebody and just keeping tabs and following up and just being there and being top of mind. Top of mind is just kind of one of the things I say a lot, turned into $10,000.
Wow.
So it's just, you just.
Of income.
Of income, yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. Wow. I mean, just like the simple act of giving without expectation. I mean, to try to nurture that relationship and stay in front of them, but nothing beyond that, right? I mean, right. You didn't know that was going to turn into a $10,000.
No, not at all. Yeah. I just, you know, that's, I guess, I don't know, my mother raised me well, I guess. It's I just, you know, I think about other people, and I think, you know, what they would enjoy. And I love to kind of know a little bit more about them. They're like, oh, you know what? Mary might like a little chocolate from my trip in Milan. And one of the things I talk about, it's also creating that story within a story. So I was in Milan a couple of years ago, and I was at this really nice pastry shop, and I saw outside, it was like, oh, founded in 1890 something. And I was like, cool, I love history. It's like, what a great, you know, historical thing. And I picked up some chocolate from it. And of course the bag, you know, said, you know, founded in 18 something, blah, 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 Milan. So I brought a few of those back and shared those with my clients. But then I also told them the story of the pastry shop. And it's like, oh, this is where it's located. This is, you know, how long it's been around. And this is a story about the family. And it's just like, you're creating that story for them to share with somebody else or share with somebody special or, you know, or share with their family back home. And you're just making yourself more memorable.
Yeah. Yeah. You are now an ingrained person in their, they will never forget you.
Exactly.
Like whenever they see that number,
yeah,
they'll think about you, you know?
It actually reminds me when I was in pharmaceutical sales and I would do all these mountaineering trips. For example, when I went to Aconcagua, I remember being in the tiny little hostel type place, making sure that the guide took me to the gas station to get 40, 50 postcards, literally signing postcards like, hey, thinking about you guys, I'm on a quick trip, but I'll be back home soon. You know, hello from Argentina.
Yeah.
I would do that on every trip and mail those out. And of course, what did every customer have when I would get back to the client's office was, you know, boom, it was pinned up in their corkboard or they had it on their desk. And it was like, oh my God, I can't believe you sent me. I was like, it cost me what?
Yeah.
Nothing, right. You know, a dollar or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just little simple things, you know, that unfortunately it's a lost art these days. And with, people texting and the phone, it's just, how can you take that into a different medium when you're writing something to them or just that simple thank you card too.
You mentioned your dad, we've talked about him, but you just mentioned your mom and something that she taught you. So why don't you tell the audience how she's also inspired your life?
Yeah. I mean, my mom, she's just a constant joy in the family. She's just super fun, super outgoing, not necessarily the life of the party, but just brings everybody together. So every time we go home in Dominican Republic, there's always a party every night or not necessarily a party, it's a get together. Let's get all the friends together. Let's catch up. It's like, oh, wow, we have leftovers. Why don't you guys come back tomorrow? It's like, okay. But that's also part of our nature as Dominicans. We're just a fun, loving, outgoing culture. And that's definitely something I've learned from her. And it's funny. Just recently, I've just come to admire that more and more where I was talking to someone and I said, you know what? I've never called my mother and heard her pick up the phone and go, hello, like on a down negative sort of, you know, tone. And it was like, no, she's always happy and outgoing. And that's what I try to portray and I try to do with my clients and I do with my friends. And everybody's like, oh, Gustav, I was always smiling, always having a, you know, a great time. And just sharing in that joy. That's definitely what I've, you know.
I have another friend who's from the Dominican Republic as well. His name is Andy Diaz. Big shout out. He's a realtor down in San Diego. And yeah, he's just a super kind, fun-loving, you know, just always ready for anything spirit, you know?
Exactly.
When you hear the word generous, who are some of the most generous people that come to mind for you that have expressed the most generosity in your life?
Wow. Gosh. I mean, I definitely got to start with a big shout out to Vincent Pugliese, who connected us. He's an inspiration on itself. I mean, he's doing that every day, every morning. He's reaching out. He's spending over an hour, you know, helping other people out, just reaching out, connecting people and whatnot. So he just does a great job. And I try to do that a little bit here and there. But Vincent is, you know, he heads my mastermind. So it's definitely a very generous soul and, you know, somebody I appreciate that's in my life. Who else can I think of in generosity? Gosh. I mean, I think of generosity and I think of my clients. I mean, they're just generous with me. You know, I try to take care of them and they, you know, that's my goal in my business is to have just a set amount of recurring clients and just recurring business. So the generosity of them, you know, calling me back every time and just, you know, basically creating that constant, you know, recurring income. But again, it's just they're counting on me. So they're just that generosity of them. They're like, hey, you are doing a good job. You are somebody that's answering an issue for us. You know, you are taking care of it. You are, you know, we don't have to think about anything else when we call you. Mm-hmm. So, and that's my goal. Mm-hmm.
I am not a professional photographer, obviously. So when I hear the word photographer, my first thought is like, you know, wedding photography, portraits on the beach, you know, Christmas cards, because that's when we typically hire a photographer, is to go capture those moments. And that's where your progression was from amateur, you know, enthusiast taking pictures of your climbs and stuff to wedding photographer in California, which is a super competitive space, to a pathway opening for you to photograph these huge brands at their corporate events and their executives and stuff. So when you transitioned from, and maybe you want to go, you can go wherever you want with this, but maybe you can start with telling a story about your first wedding that you photographed on your own. But ultimately where I'm going with this question is I want to know, when you transitioned out of the context of a wedding environment to a corporate event,
sure,
headshots of these big time executives, right, photographing Warren Buffett. Like, number one, did someone open the door for you to get there? And number two, when you got there, did you feel like an imposter?
Great question. One of the main questions I get asked a lot is like, oh, wow, it's such a different, you know, job. You did pharmaceutical sales and now you do photography. And I actually tell them, no, not really. It's actually the same job. And I say that because it's all about people. At the end of the day, it's all people. And it's all relationship-based. That's what pharmaceutical was. It's all basically relationship-based, taking care of the client, making sure they're informed, making sure that, you know, the product, you know, informing them about how the product works and whatnot. To then photography, same thing. You're in front of people every day. And that's why I love. Every day was totally different, or every day is totally different. And that's what excites me. You know, one day I'm doing this, but another day I'm doing that. I'm doing a headshot of an executive, but tomorrow I'm photographing, you know, Bill Gates on a stage and talking about how he's changing the world. So that's what I love about my job. And then, you know, who opened the door? So I started with weddings because that was kind of the fun, the sexy, and the community was all around that. And I spent several years in that and had a blast. Slowly, I started to get, you know, on lists. And what I mean by lists is, like, for example, a venue like the Fairmont Hotel or the Ritz Half Moon Bay, they have a preferred vendor list. And that vendor list, you'll usually add it on after a little while, where they see like, oh, he's a great person. We can count on him. He's a great fit for our clients. What started happening is when I was getting on these lists, they started for the wedding side, they started recommending me for the corporate side. And the reason they did that is like, because they saw that stand-up person, that person that could communicate, that person that could show up well-dressed, that person that can be in the same room with a CEO and be totally fine, you know, that person that would take care of that client. So those hotels and those venues and those other, you know, people I had worked with felt like, oh, well, Gustavo's not your typical hipster, tattooed, sort of cut-off jean wearing person. He's the guy that shows up in a suit and shows up ready, you know, to make sure that the client is taken care of and goes that extra mile too. So that's how that kind of started that transition. And what I saw was, oh, wow, this is an amazing place to kind of transition my whole business into. And the reason I say that, you know, when you look at weddings, people typically photograph, say, from 20 to 30 to 40 weddings a year as a typical wedding photographer, depending on what type of lifestyle they want. And what you have to do to get that one client every year, it's pretty significant. I mean, you know, starting from having that pretty website to that pretty blog to nowadays having to Instagram, to tweet, to, you know, to go out there and network, you know, and make out there and network. And we haven't even talked about the client yet. So you also then have to convince that client to hire you to then, on average, a year to 8 month relationship to then, you know, that whole day at the wedding day to then that post process several weeks later after the wedding to now, I still have several clients that haven't even, you know, requested their wedding albums from several years ago. So it's a very long, you know, track for that wedding client. And then you have to start over every year from scratch. wow, okay, now I have to find another 30 to 40 clients. What I found with corporate was I can get one client like JP Morgan or Forbes and do an amazing job on this one event. And they're going to be like, you know what? Why don't you just capture all our California stuff? I was like, of course, happy to. And that's how I was like, oh, wait a second. I can now build a recurring business now, recurring income business. And where I now shoot, say, 4 to 5 events for JP Morgan, and they actually fly me to Boston every other year or so to capture their innovation summit that's down out there. And if you put yourself in the client side from the corporate side, they go, okay, I need to book the hotel, I need to book the catering, I need to book the staging, I need to book the lighting. They already know that photographer's taken care of. Mm-hmm. You know, she literally calls me and goes, these are the dates, save them, bye. And she knows that I'll show up or text her the day before and she'll be like, oh yeah, we're starting at 9 a.m. by the way. So that's what literally happens every year before the JP Morgan Healthcare Conference, which is the biggest conference in San Francisco for them. And they take over, you know, most of downtown. I literally text her the day before. It's like, hey, what time are we starting again?
Yeah.
So if you can become that person that's indispensable to, you know, your clients, that's my goal. Mm. That's where I want to be. I want to have just a few handful of clients that just call me every month.
Mm. Did you ever, when you first transitioned, did you ever feel like an imposter?
I didn't, because that was my world. I came from the corporate world. So I liked that sort of process-driven sort of, you know, not necessarily check the list, but it's actually more transactional per se. Mm-hmm. You know, there's too much emotion involved with the wedding, which I actually love. I love the wedding day. It's like a ton of energy. Dominican,
you got to get that. Oh my gosh. The emotions, you're all about it.
Yeah. I just love the rush of the wedding day. And you know, for a photographer, I say that wedding photographers are the best photographers in the world. Why? Because we go into any situation and we have to deliver. Mm-hmm. So we have that experience that we can just go into any room or any place and just make sure and deliver great images. So I didn't feel so let me finish that thought. The thought of it's such a big emotional connection, and it's like 8 to a year long plus relationship sometimes, to then with a corporate client, it's just more transactional. I'm not saying there's no emotion behind it, but yeah, there's definitely friendships behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm taking these clients out to lunch or breakfast and just continuing to build that relationship. But it's just a simpler, more transactional, something you can count on for the future, something you can build and maybe potentially sell someday that just makes more sense for the lifestyle.
This episode is brought to you by the Lawton Marketing Group, a full-service advertising and design agency specializing in websites, social media, apps, logos, and more. Based in Oklahoma, they work with clients across the nation, from small businesses to large corporations and everything in between. You can find them right now on the web at www.lawtonmg.com or call them at 580-275-2063. Connect with them now for a complimentary competitive analysis of your website. Just tell them the Impact Entrepreneur told you to call.
I think that one of the things that holds people back from making change, or big or small, you know, you made a big pivot from pharmaceutical sales to photography, and then you made a small pivot from wedding photography to corporate photography. But one of the things that prevents people from making pivots at all is the incorrect belief that their prior experience has no value in what they could potentially be doing, right? So therefore they must stay put, because if they make a change, they're not going to be, they have to leave everything behind and they can't take any of that with them. And that's a big fat lie. And I would imagine that you are able to take a ton of things that you learned from being a salesperson in the pharmaceutical sales and applied that to wedding photography. But then you're also able to take the experience you had capturing moments as a wedding photographer, because it's all about moments in the wedding photography, the first kiss, the dance, first dance, right, the cutting of the cake, you know, the first kiss, all of that stuff, all of these magical moments, right? So now you're able to take that experience and the fact that you've seen all of those things and have that and apply that same kind of lens to the corporate world, to when you're photographing Bill Gates' talk and you're capturing a moment. So how do you take prior experience that may be tangentially related or not related at all and still hold it up and value it in what you're doing today? That question makes sense.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, the first thing that came to mind was discipline. I mean, I've never had an office job. I never had and like have to drive somewhere and be there at 8 a.m. and go home at 5 p.m. So, you know, number one thing that I learned was discipline. You know, I was a sales rep, so I was in my car, you know, by 8 a.m. and, you know, out there driving to see my clients and making sure I got, you know, a certain amount of calls in every day. So that's the first thing, even to this day, like if it's past 8 a.m. and I haven't like gotten out of bed or haven't, you know, checked on email or checked with a client, I feel like, oh my gosh, I'm just not doing my job. You know, even though I work from home and have a home office, it's like, I need to make sure and I'm checking in with them. You know, so the number one thing definitely is discipline. And number two thing, you know, that I learned was communication. It's just communicating with that higher level person and being comfortable in front of them. I mean, I was talking to doctors that had PhDs and they're infectious disease doctors, and it's just so much knowledge and so much time that they, you know, some of them 10 plus years in education. And here I am, this, you know, young kid out of college, like teaching them about a specific bug or a specific, you know, drug that's going to fix their issues. Mm-hmm. So just being in that environment and being comfortable with that and just learning how to kind of share your information and get to them and, you know, learning how different people hear and how different people, you know, take information. To then, you know, you mentioned capturing those moments. I think, you know, with the wedding, as like I mentioned before, being a wedding photographer, you just, you know, you become so astute as seeing those moments and capturing those moments and just kind of working on the fly and just making things happen, that when it gets to that corporate world, it's funny because it's definitely a lot slower. Mm-hmm. There's the stage. Mm-hmm. That person's not going too far. You know, it's a little bit simpler. It's a lot slower and a lot more planned. Mm-hmm. So versus in the wedding day, you're kind of the one running that schedule. Mm-hmm. So, but with the corporate world, it's great. It's a little slower. You kind of know what to expect. It's rare that, you know, things happen that are, you know, aren't in the schedule, or when they do happen, it's because I wasn't prepared enough or I didn't ask that question to that client. It's like, hey, is there any surprises coming up or is there any change in the schedule? Hmm. So definitely, you know, key thing is, you know, checking in before and, you know, or even that day when I get to that event is, hey, what's on schedule for today? Anything out of the schedule that I need to know about? Or hey, can you point out those VIPs? Because I want to make sure and concentrate them on them. Just like I used to do with the grandparents. Mm. You know, like I lost my grandparents early, and it's just like that memory that I have of them. It's like I would, you know, cherish. And I want those clients to cherish, you know, those elderly people that they have in their lives and in their families. So I would always beeline for them and check in to see who is who and, you know, making sure that I created that for them too. Mm. So just a little slower and more stage, but at the same time, it's just making sure that you're communicating, you know, just as much with the client.
And they're expecting the same level of quality. Just because it's an event, not a wedding, doesn't mean that the quality has to be any lower. If anything, it's got to be even a touch above.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know? It's, you know, I say that it's more scripted and slower, and I say, you know, it sounds like, oh, wow, he can kind of get a little lazy. Not really, because you got to kind of create that image that they're going to put out on social media that's going to look good. Mm-hmm. That's going to make their brand look good. Mm-hmm. So that's that challenge of like, okay, as soon as I'm done shooting this 1 hour keynote, I got to rush to my laptop and give this to the PR team so they can put it out. Mm-hmm. Did I get these photos in focus? Did I get cool angles? Did I get that person in the best expression? You know, did I capture the CEO well that he's happy when they post this on Twitter or Instagram or on Facebook? So that in itself creates that energy that I used to have at the wedding. It's like, okay, how can I make this look good? How can I challenge myself from a kind of a blah auditorium to kind of make it interesting?
Have you ever had like a funny request? This question just popped into my head. So if it doesn't make sense, we can totally ditch it. But have you ever had a funny request at a corporate event from, obviously you're not going to name any companies when I ask this question, but where the executive said, no, I only want pictures taken from this angle. Don't ever take me, only my right side, never my left side, you know, that kind of stuff.
You know, nobody's been, you know, the executives are always in their head, I think, you know, they're just kind of busy, like, all right, what am I going to say? Or, you know, what's going on with my panel. So they're always kind of communicating. So it's rare that they'll come up to me. But what typically happens is the planner will tell me, it's like, hey, X doesn't like the photographer, you know, to take that many photos. Just kind of get in there, get what you need and get out. Okay. So instead of you running around for an hour and kind of taking all these different angles, just kind of try to be inconspicuous and try to, you know, not move around too much and then just disappear. Mm-hmm. Because if not, I'm going to hear about it from the CEO.
Totally.
So yeah.
You mentioned earlier learning, and part of mastery is learning, and part of mastery is a willingness to begin again. And beginning again involves maybe a mistake having been made at some point along the way, or a failure of some kind. Can you take us to a moment where you finished shooting a project and realized it wasn't right and you had to essentially begin again or go back to the client and own it?
Oof. Wow. Great question. You know, the first thing that popped into my mind, you know, when it comes to photography and now digital photography is memory cards. And back in the day, they used to be way smaller. Yeah. And you used to have these like 4 gig cards and 8 gig cards. So I'd have to shoot, you know, to 8 to 10 of these cards and try to keep track of these things. When you're running around and you leave your bag in a corner all night at a wedding, it's like, oh my God, if somebody takes out, there goes the whole wedding. So luckily I wasn't, you know, part of the film days, because that's probably even more stressful. But, you know, you might have missed one or two things here, or like they kissed way too fast. So it's like you kind of missed the kiss. I mean, that might have happened, I think, once. But I'd be like, hey guys, I kind of missed that. Like, you guys totally kissed way too fast. Like, here, what's going on? Let's go back on the altar real quick and knock this out. Mm-hmm. Get a cool photo. Mm-hmm. And make sure you guys have that memory. So just being open and honest with that client as soon as possible is always, I think, the best bet. Mm-hmm. The reason I mentioned the memory cards, I just remember this one incident where I was just like, oh my gosh, I missed. Where is... So a lot of times I would shoot with two cameras.
Right.
So one would be a long lens, one would be a short lens. And I go, wait a second, where is half the ceremony? I am missing like everybody walking out. I was like, oh my gosh, it's like, what's going on? Like, it's like cards everywhere. It's like, they're not here. I had already formatted them. I was like trying to re-download with backup software. And luckily a few hours later, I pulled out one of my cameras and go, oh my God, it was literally still in that camera. I was like, I can't believe it. So I was like so stressed out. Nowadays, it's just, I shoot on one card. It's like a 32 gig card or a 64 gig card. And, you know, it always stays in my pocket. You know, just one card is easy. I literally do not a duct tape, what is called gaffer's tape, to like my inside of my pocket. It's like, I can feel it. It's still there.
Yeah, still but there. Like,
that's your whole event, kind of scary.
Well, I mean, it's important though, because I actually had a videographer. I was doing a keynote and I had a videographer there to film it. And there were supposed to be two cameras, but his second camera person flaked, didn't show up to the event. So he's got his camera. The other person has the other camera. And it's supposed to, I don't know anything about this, but I want the whole keynote filmed.
Right.
But the camera gets hot. You got to swap things out, whatever. So half of that whole footage was gone, or like certain moments were completely lost. And sure. I didn't find out about it until after he sent me the Dropbox link. And then he explained, you know, and I'm like, whatever. I mean, you have to also draw a certain line and when you're going to push back, right? So like that didn't happen. I had a certain expectation that wasn't met, and I didn't know the right questions to ask. He didn't have control over this other person bailing. So it was everybody's fault at some point, because I should have known what to ask, right? But anyway, so it's about mastery. It's about humility. It's about being willing to make mistakes, to fall, to get back up, and to start over again. And most people don't. They only think about the mastery part of it, like the end result, the outcome that they see, and they don't recognize that mastery actually has nothing to do with the bright, shiny, finished project. It has to do with everything else in between.
And that's actually a great point, because one of my favorite sayings is, if you haven't educated the the client enough, you've failed. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, wait, let me see. Let me back up. Let's scratch that. If the client, here it is. If the client is not happy, you haven't educated them enough. Mm. And what do I mean by that? I mean, perfect example, like he knows that that camera went down that day. Like he should have told you. He should, or even the next day he goes, oh gosh, there's not, that footage is not. He's like, you know what, Mike, look, this happened and I know it's a thing, and just explain it.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, this is a limitation by the camera. This happened. You know, I totally apologize. We have some great other footage. Let me make it up to you in X way.
Yeah. And he did, by the way. I need to give him credit that when I did notice it, I said, hey, let's figure out a way to like, you know, to shoot some extra B-roll footage or whatever so I can get that. And he totally did it. And he owned it.
Yeah.
And he did the right thing ultimately.
Yeah.
But many people don't.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, the first thing I thought of when you kind of mentioned that question was, for beginner photographers, it's like they don't have the backup equipment. You know, unfortunately, they maybe don't have that budget yet. And it's like, I can't hire you to shoot an event for me. Like, what happens if that camera goes down? Then what? You're just kind of sitting there. And, you know, I've done this long enough where there's probably now two and then maybe three instances where my camera has glitched and is like, oh, you know what? I don't have time to play with it. I need to go grab my other camera in the bag. And there's often times I shoot for NASDAQ all the time, the Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. And we do a lot of live bell ringing ceremonies. We'll do the morning ones or the closing bell ceremony, opening bell and closing bell. And I literally have my I mostly shoot with one camera now, but I will have my second camera with me on the floor set to the settings just in case that camera goes down, because we're shooting live and I can't miss that. Mm-hmm. So it's just having that backup, thinking through that process. I mean, every time I go do a headshot for an executive, for example, I'm like, okay, if my two lights go down, what do I do now? Mm-hmm. You know, okay, I have my extra flashes that I can, you know, make sure and still deliver a good product. But unfortunately, a lot of times people are just kind of flying by the seat of their pants and just
trying. How do you prepare that executive? Because like I think for everybody, preparation is the bridge between expectations and reality, right? So if you don't do that prep work, if you don't set your camera, your second camera to the proper settings and your other camera goes down, then what someone expects is going to be completely out of line with reality. So how do you set expectations for your clients, but also for yourself?
Sure. I mean, you know, the key thing, like I mentioned, was it's just educating that client. You know, when they do book you for that job, it's like, hey, here are the next steps. Here's kind of the typical what happens in this situation. This is what I bring. It takes them about 30 minutes to set up or so, if we're talking about headshots, for example, because event photography is like a little bit simpler in that way. But this is kind of, you know, here's the size of room I need. Don't worry about the lighting in the room. I'm bringing all my own lighting. To then, you know, that executive walks in and just, that's somebody that hasn't seen your emails and has no idea what's going on or what the process is going to be like. So it's always, for me, it's about kind of sitting back for a second, talking to that person, talking to them, making them comfortable, connecting with them, doing a little bit of research. 5 minutes of research can go a long way. It's like, oh, I see you have a couple kids, or I see you love skiing, and maybe, oh wow, I was just in Tahoe last weekend. What's your favorite place to ski?
Yeah.
To kind of get them a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
And just, you know, get them to come out, tell, you know, ask them some probing questions and, you know, get them to kind of relax that way. And as a lot of times I'll see is they're a little bit stiff at the beginning, and then slowly and slowly they're getting more and more comfortable as I keep taking more and more photos and I keep engaging them. Very often I'll just bring them back and show them the computer. It's like, hey, this is what's going on. This is what we're doing. And even before then, it's like, hey, this is a process. We're going to take some photos. I'm going to show you, make sure you're happy. And then we're going to take some more, because as soon as you see yourself, you're going to realize, oh my gosh, we're having a great time. These look good. Then we're going to polish it off with some even better expressions at the end.
Yeah.
And then they walk out super happy that you educated them. You had a great conversation. You kind of connected on a different level. They're super happy. And then that admin is going to be even happier.
Yeah.
Because that executive had a great experience. And they're like, oh my gosh, call Gustavo next time, whatever we need.
Is that how you help? Because most people don't like having their pictures taken. So it's an incredibly vulnerable experience and it makes people very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So is that what you just described? Is that how you get people to take their walls down?
Exactly. It's just
is it universal? Are there some people that they sit down and they're like ready to go? Or is it at some level, everybody is uncomfortable?
I think at some level, everybody is uncomfortable. You know, we're all, you know, at some point, very self-conscious. I see this as like, you're a psychologist, basically. You're standing in front of a person that's sort of naked per se. They're like, this is who I am. And I somehow, you got to make them look the way that they think they are or even better. And it's like, how can you take those fears of what they think they're going to look like and, you know, quash those? And it's like, best way to do that is to make them comfortable, make them have a great experience. You know, if you make them have a great experience, they'll forget about, you know, that photo. They'll just say, wow, you know what? We had fun. Gustav was great. And that photo, you know, it's good. I like it. It is me. We worked through it. You know, he made me more comfortable. We did a few tries and we tried different things. And, you know, he came prepared because he looked at my old ones and he showed me why his, you know, that old one was not as great for him and maybe that angle and whatnot. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's just having that conversation. You know, not many people do that. And it's, you know, it just reminded me of what's key to do every once in a while is just to step out of your own world and go into somebody else's world. And what do I mean by that? I was kind of getting a little complacent on how I would do all my setups and how I do all my shoots. So I called a few friends. I had a couple of weeks that were pretty slow and I go, hey, can I come and just shadow you? Let me be your main assistant. I want to see how you do your headshots. I want to see how you do your events. I want to see how you communicate with your clients. You know, because I'm at a certain place and they're like, oh, wow, you know, I'm doing great. Like, what can I do better? How can I step it up? What's the next level for me? And I kind of see other people, you know, we kind of create this story in our heads of, oh, wow, they're killing it. They're doing amazing. Wow, look at their social media and whatnot. Which, by the way, I don't follow any of my colleagues or any of those people that are sort of at my level to eliminate all that FOMO per se.
Right, right.
I only follow aspirational people or super funny, you know, jokes, which just entertain me, which is a lot of fun. So I went out with two of my friends and had an experience with two different headshots. And I just said, wow, you know what? I am doing it right. You know, I am unique because of this. I am, you know, rocking it because, oh my God, these guys are not educating their client. They're just kind of coming in cold and just kind of, it's all about them and not about the client. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not necessarily educating them as much as I do. And it just kind of reassured me like, okay, take a couple of things that you did learn that they did do right and maybe implement that into my business. But then also give me that sense of like, stop thinking so much about the process and just keep going because you are doing doing well.
Yeah. If you get stuck in the process, you know, you can derail your own success. You
exactly.
That's very interesting. I think incredibly important because essentially what you're doing, I mean, those are your friends and colleagues, but on the one hand, but on the other hand, they're also your competitors, right?
Right.
But you don't have to look at them as an either or scenario. You can look at them as both. And I'm totally spacing on the book, but there's a book about like leaning into your competitors as opposed to hating them and looking at them as ways to grow and to get better as opposed to threats.
You know? Exactly.
And that's an incredibly I bet you it's been eye-opening, as you just said, to experience that and to follow them and see how they're doing things and to learn how you are already a step ahead.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, we're all unique. You know, they get hired because of a certain connection or a certain way that they did something. And I get hired because of, you know, the way I do things. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I try to kind of reset my mind to, you know, just being grateful that they're out there and they're making me want to do better. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my gosh, look at that young kid. They just put up this cool website and it's got all these great videos. Like, you know what? I need to start putting some videos out. You know what? Like, yes, JP Morgan or Forbes or NASDAQ is not going to hire them. You know, they're too sort of young maybe, but they're going to get there someday. Mm-hmm. So I need to make sure that I'm still that, you know,
staying relevant,
staying very relevant. And this, you know, making sure I'm doing the things that I, you know, the younger generation is doing per se.
Well, believe it or not, time flies when you're having fun. And before we wrap with the three final questions that I ask of every single guest, I want to make sure that people can connect with you online and go check out your work and and reach out to you. So where would be the best place for them to go?
Yeah, just my website. It's the easiest place, GustavoFernandez.com.
Okay. And then you're on Facebook, but do you have like...
Yeah. I'm on, of course. Instagram. I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram, and Twitter kind of just sits there. Yeah. But I just kind of feed to it. But yeah, Instagram, I'm there. Just Gustavo Fernandez. And then Facebook, Gustavo Fernandez Photographer. But, you know, just to make a quick point on social media, it's an interesting world, and it definitely gets people a lot of clients. Mm-hmm. And I see where my clients are not necessarily there. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is the head of events for JP Morgan or for Forbes or for Nasdaq is not necessarily sitting around on Instagram looking for a photographer.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're the ones that are looking for that word of mouth, are looking for that seasoned person that's also not there sitting around and whatnot.
Yeah. And that's old school.
That's old school. So that's why I talk about old school tactics, like picking up the phone, like returning things in a timely manner, like picking up the phone and calling them, because they are those type of people that pick up phone calls too.
Yeah, totally.
So I don't spend a significant amount of energy in that world, but I definitely, you know, look in there just to keep up.
Yeah, totally. Okay. The first of the final three questions is, if you could pick any skill set that you currently possess and turn it into a superpower, and it can't be photography, I'm going to eliminate that one. So any skill set besides photography that you currently possess and turn it into a superpower, what would it be?
Great question. Skill set turned into a superpower. I mean, just building relationships. I mean, relationships is what drives the world these days. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what my whole business is built on. I get pretty much 95% of my work through word of mouth. Mm-hmm. It's all about, you know, connecting with people and just networking and just being there, being a resource, and just not being just that person that shows up and does their job. Mm-hmm. How can you help the other people out? How can you help that person that referred you? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a lot of times helping move chairs or helping move, oh, wow, there's a napkin on the floor. Let me pick that up. It's like, it's not my job. Yeah, it's the hotel, you know, staff job, but how can I make my, you know, that person that referred me, or even that venue, or it doesn't matter, how can I make this flow? How can I make this a more memorable event for these people? And, you know, and not just think of myself and think of others and just being of service. And that's just, you know, I think that's the key.
What are three lies that we tell ourselves that prevent us from realizing what we're capable of?
I think it's like, we're not good enough. We always tell ourselves that, and that's probably times three, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't have X, I can't do that, or I don't have that, because so therefore I can't do that. So if we could just, you know, believe in ourselves more and find that coach that can, that believes in you, that can push you, I think that's the key. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, you know, pushing yourself and believing in yourself is that number one thing that we're always lying to ourselves about. It's like, wow, I can't do this. Like, yes, you can. You know, look at all these amazing success stories that we read about every day on the internet, or, you know, or on the newspaper. And that's definitely my number one probably recommendation would be, to find a guide. Mm-hmm. Find somebody that is up there. Find somebody that you can look up to. Find that aspirational person. For me, it's funny because I love to find the people that nobody knows about. I love to find that successful person that has an amazing family, has the lifestyle, but is not on social media, is not on, you know, anywhere on the web. It's just doing a great job, delivering for their clients. Their clients are super happy and they're just there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would love to kind of build, and that's what I'm building, and that's what I want to build, you know, as my legacy. It's like, hey, we counted on him. He delivered, you know, and we have a great friendship at the end of the day. Mm-hmm.
It's 100 years from now, and you left a set of instructions for an artist to create a collage of photographs that you've taken over the course, that you took, because you're dead now, it's 100 years from now, that you took over the course of your life and career, that will answer the question, how will you measure your life? What kind of photos will that collage consist of?
Oh, great question. I mean, it's funny because I definitely see my wedding photography and portrait photography as more impactful, as in, you know, somebody's future, as compared to maybe a corporate event. Like, oh, wow, I got a great photo of Joe Biden or a great photo of Bill Gates. You know, I don't see that as too impactful. I see that as impactful for, you know, that person I delivered that, you know, great product to. But when I think about photographs, I think about, you know, the moments of joy. And that's what I try to capture in my photography. It's when, you know, challenge myself to capture those moments of joy. You know, it takes me back to a lot of, you know, times at one of my favorite photos is one of my brides. She had cancer and she had relapsed, and she was, you know, she was putting makeup on above her chest here on the area. And I was like, oh, what's, and I kind of paid attention and took a closer look. I was like, oh, and asked her about it. It's like, oh, what is that scar? It's like, well, that's the scar where my ports were for, you know, when I was getting all my treatments. And, you know, just capturing that photo of her, like, oh my gosh, I've survived cancer. Here I am thriving. You know, that's definitely those are the stories I want to, you know, kind of remember and share that I've made a difference. Some of my favorite stories is also, you know, families. I've captured two or three different families where I've done two or three of the different siblings for each family. Where that, all right, now it's a third sibling. Let's call it Gustavo. I know he's not into business, but we're still calling him and he's still going to show up, in which I will. So that's, you know, 100 years from now, it's just capturing that joy and say that corporate events or that joy and that history. Mainly it's the history. I just love history and I love, you know, kind of capturing and creating that history for, is it a company or is it for a family? Mm.
Gustavo Fernandez, thank you so much for joining us on the Impact Entrepreneur Show. This has been a blast.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure and a treat and exciting, you know, time. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you to this week's guest, and thank you for listening. If you missed any of the key points and highlights from my conversation, we've got you covered over at theimpactentrepreneur.net/podcast for show notes to each and every episode. And while you are there, check out Flynn Wealth Strategies and Insurance Solutions. You can do that by visiting flynnwealthstrategies.com. The Lawton Marketing Group and the Podcast Masters. We could not do this show without them and with all of their support. Now, until next time, go make an impact.